How can we engage the culture, especially in books, music, and movies, with charitable and critical discussion through a lens of faith and as a means of drawing ourselves and others closer to Jesus? I'm Ali LaVille.
And I'm Andy Norton. This is Though They Die, talking about the things of this world through the lens of eternity. Today we're discussing The Mandalorian Season 1. Welcome to the show.
Gosh, I was just realizing, I was like, we're on camera for the first time.
Yeah, for the first time.
And as the music's playing, I'm like, oh, this is normally like where there's a fun like graphic sequence or something. And I decided to create it with my hands.
Oh, with your hands.
But I don't know how aware no. I was. I was like, at the moment I was like, oh yes, if I do this, the graphic will appear. I'm not in marketing. Clearly, I have no idea how anything works.
In post.
We'll fix it in post.
Oh, my gosh. Well, this is great. Yes, this is our first video podcast. Of course, listening to this on Apple Podcasts or anything, you shouldn't miss out on too much. But we are on video, on camera, if you want to check us out on YouTube. Yeah, first time. And including also, we are putting up all of our old episodes on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Not filmed, but with, what's it called, waveform?
Waveform in there. Waveform. Give you something to look at.
Yeah, so that should be fun. Fine. We're so excited to be on YouTube. Like, I'm a YouTube bro. Are you a YouTube bro?
I'm a YouTube bro. Yeah. YouTube has taken so much of my life.
But it's given so much to you, right? It's given so much.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, God.
YouTube's like a second father.
Oh my gosh.
Everything you didn't learn, it teaches you.
That should seem very problematic. I will say, YouTube actually taught me how to tie a tie. My dad taught me. My dad was kind of dad when he explains things, though. Like, he just does it for you. And then by the end of it, you, like, don't know how to do it because he just ended up doing it.
Totally.
So like when he's teaching you how to tie your shoes, he just ends up tying your shoes. And then you're like, well, what the? They're already tied.
Sometimes I wish the YouTube guy could just fix my furnace for me or whatever. But instead, I have to watch what he's doing. I have to do it myself. So this is so good. We're so excited to be here, and also so excited to talk about The Mandalorian.
Woo, segue.
The Mandalorian. Oh my gosh. So of course, if you're not familiar with this is The Mandalorian. It's the debut TV show or series for Disney Plus. That was a little message from for Ali.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. That was nice and bright.
Yeah, very pingy.
Oh, man. But no, Mandalorian, this is what they sold Disney Plus, on for millions
Of
subscribers.
I totally forgot that. I think it was the day one. They were banking a lot on it.
I think it launched with the first episode, if I remember correctly, the pilot episode of The Mandalorian.
That sounds right. Yeah.
But want me to just jump right into the synopsis?
Synopsis, let's go.
Cool. So, synopsis. Thank you for letting me do this, Ali.
You're so welcome, Andy. Yeah.
After the stories of Jango and Boba Fett, another warrior emerges in the Star Wars universe. The Mandalorian is set after the fall of the Empire and before the emergence of the First Order. We follow the travels of a lone gunfighter in the outer reaches of the galaxy, the Outer Rim, far from the authority of the New Republic. Dot, dot, dot.
You almost went into the client there for a second.
The client.
I would like to see the baby.
Oh my gosh, so good, so good. I think that's the official synopsis from Disney Plus.
There you go.
I think it's pretty solid. Doesn't really get into like what the story's about. But
they want you to watch it. They want you to buy a subscription.
And there was a very, 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 very huge reveal and secret that had been kept at the very end of the first episode of the first season. Remember this? The very end is the
open.
By the way, spoilers
as always.
I thought
the end of season two there. You said big.
Sorry. Yeah.
Reveal.
Yeah. Yes.
And I was like, wait, shoot, what was season one again? I caught up. I did the beginning part of season one again. I rewatched, but I have not seen the end of season one in a minute. But I've been going over.
Totally.
But that said though, I think the end of season one was far more exciting than the end of season two, even though the end of season two is technically like a bigger reveal.
Oh yeah.
At the end of season one, we're in it now.
In it.
Yep, when the dark saber comes out, I was like, flipped. Yeah. I lost my mind.
Did you know the reference there?
Yeah.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Huge.
Cool.
It's what the King of Mandalore wields, right? Like that is the power.
Yeah.
That is the
absolutely.
Power.
Absolutely.
One in combat.
Yes.
No other way. No exceptions, right? Like,
so what I'm thinking about though is at the end of the first episode. That reveal. Yes.
With
the baby.
Yoda.
I'd like to see the baby. Yeah. Yeah. Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
So they kept that totally under wraps. No one knew.
That's true.
That Baby Yoda was a thing at all.
That's right.
Including like they did not do anything for you know, toys, merchandising, or merch, toys,
yeah. Anything. It took anything. Forever to get Baby Yoda stuff. I remember because yes, there was like yeah. everyone was like
everyone wanted it.
Wanted it.
Yeah.
Bad.
Which we now have. I have a Mandalorian. Or, of course. Baby Yoda.
Do you have the knit one?
No, not like the fancy one.
Oh, I think the knit one is the best.
It looks plenty good. It looks plenty good, my little right. Baby Yoda. And I also have a little Baby Yoda Christmas. I was holding it the whole time.
I would like to see the yes, baby.
That was a huge reveal at the end of it. So yeah. I think that's why the synopsis here does not mention really anything about the story, because you really don't know. You go into it blind.
Which is nice. Yeah, no so expectations. Good.
Yeah.
Which is the way it should be.
Do you remember first watching it?
Oh my gosh, yeah, when I first watched it, I was losing my mind. This is the I don't really watch shows yeah. a ton. Usually what happens is someone is like a good friend is referencing something a bunch.
Yeah.
And so then I end up watching it because I just want to be like, you know, I love my friends, you know, and I want to like get in on it yeah. kind of thing. But this one I was totally in it and watching it as soon as I could every Friday or whenever it got released.
Yeah.
And I remember after the first episode being like, This is the greatest Star Wars content I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Hands down, no exceptions. I was like, this is the new standard for yeah. Star Wars. Because up until that point, I think my favorite was Rogue One. Because nice. I mean, you know, the films are fun.
I love
to hear that.
I love Rogue One. Yeah.
Yeah, but Rogue One, I was like, I'm very passionate about consequences in films. I hated Frozen 2. For that reason, even though I loved a lot of Frozen 2.
Yeah.
This is hilarious. But there was no consequences.
Yeah.
Spoilers. There's no consequences. Okay. And I was like, no, that's not life. That's not yeah. how it works. But Rogue One, spoilers.
Lots of spoilers. Yeah.
All the consequences.
Yeah.
And so I think, Mandalorian then felt a lot more like real life. I mean, in the first, you know, 5 minutes or whatever, what, three people die yeah, or something yeah, like that? Yeah, I was yeah. like, in this kind of, you know, gritty Western style, it's like, yeah.
Yes.
Yes, people are going to die. Yeah. That's how it goes, you know? Especially when you're dealing with this level of, you know, stakes and...
Yeah, and in the Outer Rim and like in this like really, you know, it's the setting is amazing where it's like the Old West type of side of Star Wars and it's in the fall of the Empire, so there's no real like... power that's ruling the galaxy in the yep. same way. And yeah, I was hooked from the beginning as well. I would get up like literally between like 4 and 6 Gosh. To watch the episodes. Gosh, I think ridiculous. I would watch it in the morning. I'd rewatch it over lunch break. I'd watch it again with my family that evening.
Like I was not that committed.
I was not obsessed.
I watched it once.
Yeah. But what you said is I agree with, well, I kind of, yeah, I agree with that. I remember leading up to it, I was telling people, I was like, I think this is going to be the best Star Wars content since the original trilogy. And then afterwards I was like, I think I'm wrong. I think this is better than the original trilogy.
Yeah.
So of course you can't really say that because it's so based in the original. It's right. so drawing from it.
Yeah.
But it's almost more true to the original's like story and themes.
And I think the thing about the original movies is that it was a new It was a totally new landscape,
yeah.
right? And the scope of it was massive. It's yeah. a whole new universe with a whole new mythology to yes, it and different things like that. But it was still very human, right? And all of the subsequent films have just kind of leached off of that. And yeah. I don't necessarily... I mean, I think there's pros and cons to that, right? But I think some of the errors of the sequel movies where it's like, they were like leeching off of it, but then they were like, oh no, we're our own thing. But it was still so steeped in yeah. the previous and heavily relying on it as like a crutch almost.
Totally.
So where The Mandalorian succeeded was that it took what it needed from what the original stuff gave.
Yeah.
But then totally like made its own style and its own form that didn't disrespect
yeah.
the original material, but it breathed new life into it by just creating well-rounded characters.
Yeah.
It was it's very character focused.
So character
and because focused. because it's character focused and it's willing to risk you know, like whatever that means budget wise or plot moving wise, and because they started with the end in mind, yeah. I think is also huge. They were really able to dive into character development, and I think that's what sets it apart from a lot of the other Star Wars content is that it begins with the end in mind and they already know everything, right? Yes. Like there's no guessing kind of thing. Like they started with a full plot.
And multiple seasons and multiple spinoffs and all that in mind. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's so true. I think they it's like, on the one hand, every episode, you're like, oh, this is a nice, cute throwback to the original trilogy. Like, all these references to the original trilogy. But also, like, beyond that, it's there's references to the things that inspired George Lucas, you know, like samurai movies and westerns and all these things. And so it, like, goes back to the sources in a way that's almost more pure than the original trilogy, at least as it went along.
Totally.
And went back more purely, I think, to, like, as you said, like the characters, the characterization and the, so when George Lucas wrote Star Wars, he was inspired largely by the hero's journey. And I think it was a book called A Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Yeah,
I think.
Something like that.
And so he was very inspired by this idea where there's this kind of archetypal story of the hero and his journey and that he meets a guide along the way and that there's a, you know, there's like a falling where like things get really terrible before like a resurrection and a return. Yeah, you can pull it up on your computer because that's what we do here in the studio. We've got computers with us.
Hero with
a Thousand Faces. Of a Thousand Faces.
Book by Joseph Campbell.
Yeah, Joseph Campbell. Exactly. Joseph Campbell. If you want to hear more about that, yeah, actually, The Mandalorian on Disney Plus has something called The Gallery, which is like deep dives on every aspect of the making of The Mandalorian. It's amazing. But one of them is The Legacy, I think is the title of the episode. And it's talking about how the story of the original Star Wars influenced the story of The Mandalorian. And at the end, there's like a 15-minute monologue where Dave Filoni, the show writer, alongside Jon Favreau, goes into just detail of what the story really is about of Star Wars and how it's about family and it's about the search for the father and that the hero is like looking, the hero's relationship with the father. It's crazy. It's like, it's amazing. The other directors are sitting at the table just being like, they just directed all these episodes of The Mandalorian, but they're still just like mouth open, aghast, like as they're hearing the story laid out by Dave Filoni, who's like the key disciple of George Lucas, you know. But I just think The Mandalorian like really hits those archetypes in a way that is even bigger than the original series in some ways. And you see that too, even like the titles of the chapters, you know, like The Mandalorian, The Child, The Sin, Sanctuary, The Gunslinger, The Prisoner, The Reckoning, Meticulous. The Redemption. There's this idea of, or even like the client character is just called The Client. Moff Gideon, you know, like the Moff. There's this way in which each of these characters that is very blatantly tapping into like this archetypal, ideas. Mm-hmm. And it like, yeah, just does such an amazing job with that. So I love that. So maybe just to start getting into that, let's just start off with The Mandalorian. So you in the first episode, you see he's got that little tracker and he, you know, walks into that yes, it's beeping. Oh my gosh. And then when the door opens in that classic Star Wars like door opening way, and you hear the
quick note on that. Yeah. So I love how entrenched Western, like the spaghetti Western is in this. The I'm pretty sure it's Fistful of Dollars. What is
very
it?
Very similar.
Oh, it's. Oh, I was. I knew this was going to happen. I kept playing both of the melodies in my
plays?
Head. No, Fistful of Dollars is. And so. It's very, it very it, yeah. close. But it's hilarious because in The Mandalorian, the first episode is on this ice planet, which is totally not a Western, right? But it's the exact opposite kind of thing, which is I just think is a fun little nod.
I love that.
But it also, because it's still this barren place, I think the audience intuitively kind of fills the gaps and is like, oh, this is a Western, right? Because we see the bar, there's shady characters, a guy walks in and everyone gets quiet. That's super classic. And the other thing is that in the Western, right, you've got those two little, I don't know what those are called, the swinging doors that are not really doors at all, and they don't do anything to keep out air. But doors,
that's so true.
Right? And that's an iconic thing. And similarly, right, he walks in and it's the kind of what's the spiral called in nature that repeats itself? The
oh god,
you know what I'm talking about? That mathematical equation.
Like I know what you're talking about, but I don't know what it's called.
Ah.
That's amazing.
But it it kind of looks like that, right?
Yeah. Interesting.
And it's iconic. So they're setting up just automatically, kind of shot for shot, almost a typical Western entrance.
Yeah.
And we recognize that. I think whether we articulate it or not, there's, I think just based on like culture, we're like, oh, okay, we kind of know what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Which is really cool because they're using what they can, right? To make something happen good. They're not trying to reinvent the wheel.
Totally.
Which I think is just really smart.
I love that.
And because of that, we buy in. And also I love how long it takes him to say something.
Yes.
Like he doesn't say anything until after the fight, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Where he says, I can bring you in warm or I can bring you in cold.
Yeah, exactly.
And that I think then sets up the rest of his character development where it's like, we don't really need him to say his backstory.
Yeah.
And in the first episode, we do get some flashbacks kind of thing that are loose and we're like, okay, we're kind of getting a feel for him, but they're not shoving it down our throats. They're allowing us to infer based on the quality of the actor, what his backstory is, which is what we do in life, right? I cannot stand exposition in films where they're like, hello, welcome to our movie. We're just going to explain everything now to you, stupid little audience member,
because
you're dumb.
Yeah,
it's like, no. Audiences don't want to feel dumb.
Totally.
And The Mandalorian assumes that the audience is smart, and it lets us infer. And because of that, I just had tremendous buy-in and resonance with the character, which sets up for some of the big, like, God the Father themes, I think, that go in. Yeah. I was just like, resonating with him instantly.
100%. And with that too, they don't just assume, but they do all the work to make you understand.
And show you.
Like you said, that you can pick up from the scene, how he's dressed, the way the music is, the mystery of that. Even the fact that the music has like that, it has like the, sounds like a galloping horse, right? Which is like, totally like, okay, this is a cowboy, you know, this is a samurai cowboy. And I know I have something to go off of, even though he's silent and stoic and, you know, and I don't, he's not saying a bunch of, and I don't see his face. You don't see his face for almost the entire series. And yet somehow you are.
Yeah. It's like the
understanding last, him.
Or is it season two? I don't remember when that happens. Season two, you see his face?
No, it's the very end of season one. You see it for a second.
Oh, that's the.
The last
the cafeteria
episode.
Is that season
yes.
one?
Yes, yeah. Yes, definitely.
That's right, because the end of season two is the other thing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, side note on his face shield, I think that's an amazing. So he has a helmet on almost the entire time. Mm-hmm. Because of that, you don't see his face, and yet somehow you connect him so much as a character. And I think part of it is that it's a mirror, right? So you are like almost seeing yourself in it. And also, it's a blank slate, so you're able to put on it sort of how you think he is, or even see your own face there. I think that's a brilliant thing. And with that, too, just another quick side note, just huge shout out to the people who made this, because they used new technology and pioneered new technology in order to have, instead of using green screens, they used this this thing called the volume, where they would have these screens behind them, and they would use VR and game system technology to have instant feedback. If you move the camera, the screens would change.
Yeah.
And so they were able to have the characters walk around in what looked like the actual like world.
So helpful for acting.
So good for acting. Yeah. And what's amazing is, so he's walking around with this bright, perfectly clean helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of picking up green screen and having to edit out everything on his helmet constantly,
the lighting,
he's picking up actual lighting and actual images of the background and everything. Like there's no work that they have to do to like edit that out.
Yep.
Which again just provides the realism. Cause I think one thing I always go off about is like, if you can nail the realism, both in terms of like how the world looks, but also like these are real characters acting in the way that real people would and not just in the way that you kind of want to do to tell your story and like have an agenda or something.
Yeah.
Like I think that's where you get to huge, huge, deep things. So let's transition right into that of like, man, we got all these amazing characters who act in like really believable ways.
Yeah.
Right. And like you can really engage with. So The Mandalorian, he, of course, we meet him and he is, he is, you know, stoic and cold and just, you know, brings in this bounty, right? Mm-hmm. And then he gets set up with a new bounty. And this mm-hmm. is what he's doing. He's working for in order to like help fund the covert of other Mandalorian warriors so they can stay in hiding mm-hmm. After the fall of Mandalore. But he gets this mark and he has to go find it. So it takes him to this other planet, right? And then does he get waylaid there? And well, how does Kuiil come into the?
I think he is attacked by some of How do you say it?
The Blurgs.
He gets attacked by the Blurgs. Yeah. What's the guy's name?
Oh, Kuiil.
So he stops the Blurgs.
Oh yes.
And then the guy's like, "Can I rent a speeder from you or whatever?" He's like, "You need a Blurg. You cannot make it without a Blurg."
Yes, thank you.
I have spoken.
And then you get that first. Classic line from that everyone knows. I have spoken.
Yeah, yeah. So which is another thing about the show. They have little catchphrases, one-liners that really stick with you. Which is, I think, not necessarily a result of like brilliant brainstorming, but just good character development.
Yes.
Because if you buy in and you like a character, it doesn't matter what they say, you're gonna remember it because you like the character.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So I think that's how it starts, and that is when his kind of brooding. Yeah, like super cool, stealthy guy, I think really starts to fade and you get a much more human person, which I think is very cool that they do that within one episode.
Yeah.
So at that point, we've seen some of the little flashbacks, right? Because that happens right when he's in the armory and everything's getting forged.
Exactly.
His new little shoulder piece.
Yes.
But I think that it's once he gets beaten by the Blurg and he starts going on this journey and some other stuff that we kind of see that he's a little more broken than what we like, but in a relatable and tangible way, as opposed to this like Batman kind of way. Yeah. Like it's much more, it feels much more reachable and approachable and relatable. And I think that then sets us up for when he first sees the child. And we just get that final shot with the little fingers, the little baby Yoda finger, and then his finger going down to it. And that's when it's just like, that's when you're really like, oh, this guy is so human.
Yes.
He is so human. And he abides by a code, right? That helped him survive. But in a way, I think it reflects, as children, we develop habits that might not necessarily be healthy for us, but they help us survive. And we don't realize that later until adult life, that some of those habits actually were wounding us and enabling us to stay wounded.
Wow.
Even if they were developed as children for our own protection kind of thing. And so I think similarly with him, a lot of this code that he abides by is actually probably enabling some woundedness in his life. And it's this child that's 50 years old, but a child that is able to just absolutely all of that, just cast it aside. And we see this human that is just trying to do the right thing. And that is what then like pulls at him. He recognizes that truth. And that's why he goes back for the child after he brings in the bounty, the kid. And rescues him because he's had an encounter, right?
Yes.
With the son, I guess we can say, because the kid is a boy, I think we assume.
Yeah, yeah.
Grogu.
Yeah.
So that ends up eventually being his name. Eventually you learn his name is Grogu. And so I think something to note there is how we have these encounters over the course of our lives with the living God, that totally cut through everything. Mm. And for a moment, whether we're willing to admit it or not, there's no way that we can run from that reality, right? Like I pray that if this hasn't happened, it happens soon for you.
Yeah.
But that you have this moment where the Lord just touches you and you're just frozen. There's nothing you can do but see him speaking to you. And I love that. It's because of that moment that literally everything for his life changes and he is totally changed, whether he likes it or not, right?
Yeah.
Like he can't run from it anymore because of the encounter. And I just think that's absolutely lovely. But I want to get in more. I want to hear your thoughts, but I really want to get into some of the God the Father stuff that you've picked up.
Well, I think you just served it up perfectly. Cause I mean, really you're talking about that encounter, but that closing shot of the first episode, the very first episode where, the Mandalorian is reaching down with his finger and touches the finger of the baby Yoda, you know, Grogu, the child, and their fingers touch and just cuts to black as you hear the swell of music. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good! clearly, it's like kind of a reference to like E.T., alien creature with like, you know, touching fingers, which is like, but also that also in itself, both of those are a callback. Really, I think on some level to the image and what's behind the image of the creation of Adam and God, you know, God
yeah,
reaching
giving life
down
into Adam.
Yes, when God's finger is just reaching out and then Adam's laying there with his hand
just
out,
just like this. Just that's like exactly that. How it happened.
Yep, there we go. Yeah, exactly, there we go. Exactly. Yep. And so, like, and it's that image. Yeah. It's that image, and yeah, it's like your father and child. Father and child, in that encounter, in that connection of life and what's amazing is that I think, of course, it's not like a perfect analogy, and so there's in some ways, the Mandalorian is a father to the child, in other ways the child isn't a father to him, but like saves him in a sense, right?
The son,
yeah.
I mean, he's the son to him.
Yeah,
they both.
And it's similar to in the original trilogy, where in Return of the Jedi. Luke is trying to save his father.
Yeah.
And he goes and he says, you know, he's casts aside his lightsaber and says, I will not fight you. I'm a Jedi like my father before me. And then, you know, the Emperor, of course, you know, young fool. Only now at the end. And he electrocutes him. We would do all the time as kids, right? Like, you would tickle each other, but just be like,
unlimited power! You will die.
It's pretty close anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. But he does that, and then the father is looking back and forth, grabs Emperor Palpatine and casts him into the pit, never to be seen again. So never to be seen again. In a sense, the father then saves the son, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's a way in which they both save each other, you know? And I'm not saying that that we in any way save God. That's not at all what I'm saying. But just our experience humanly is, I think, in many ways, we with other people at least, our experience like a mutual saving. You know, like when we encounter Christ in others, and just how most of our stories are going to be more like that kind of story, where it's like, you know, maybe you're more of a father figure to someone else. Well, I'm thinking about my kids even, like. Gosh, in my vocation to marriage, I have been saved. Like, I've so much been saved. And that's why I relate so closely to the Mandalorian is that, like, in marriage, being a father, I've so much experienced being saved by the encounter with a child in whom I see, like, the face of the father, the love of the father, in whom I see my role as a father. And in my love for the child, I experience the love of the father and I realize the love that I have for my child is an imperfect image of the perfect and immeasurable love of the father for me. So I've come to know the father and to be saved through my fatherhood. And I know, and I hope that my child is in a sense saved as well. He's safeguarded and protected by me. And brought into eternity, or led into the path of discipleship, at least as far as all I can do. And so there's a mutual saving that goes on there, and so that's it for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's just that calling to priest, prophet, and king. I mean, similarly, I think we have to at different points in our life. Be the Holy Spirit for someone, whether that's like acknowledging a prompting from the Holy Spirit and acting.
Yeah.
We have to be the Son, the hands and feet of God to someone, right? Yeah. Like just encountering people.
Totally.
And then specifically in role as men, like we have to take up our role as fathers.
Yeah.
In whatever capacity we're called to do that. Right.
Exactly.
And that's, I think what we're seeing here in the Mandalorian is this. So while the child kind of takes up role as the son, yeah. as this moment of encounter with the Mandalorian,
yeah,
which is huge, right? Because that's after the encounter with the son, the living God, the Word made flesh. That's I think that's more often than not, right? A big like conversion point for
Absolutely.
Folks.
Absolutely.
But then it's the love of the father that the son eventually like learns and grows from, right? Yeah, where he's yes. able to not, at one point, I don't know if that's, that, I think this is season two I'm getting into, but when the son is kind of using the force for evil, there's like some force choking
yeah.
happening and Mando's like, no,
yeah, exactly.
no,
it's a teaching.
No.
Yeah.
But they take on these different roles kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's totally the human experience, right? And specifically, I think it's very tangible for men, right? I mean, we're all, women included, called to be priest, prophet, king.
Yeah.
But just by nature of the language, right? It might be a little more tangible to look at our role as yeah. like being the father, being the son, and being the spirit, and allowing them to work through us in those different ways.
Right.
But I think it's absolutely, yeah. And I think it's really interesting too, how then, you know, because of this encounter, everyone around him changes too. Yeah. I mean, you look at the,
so
what's his name?
Greef Karga.
Is that oh. Mr. Mr.
Carl Weathers,
the bounty,
yeah,
the
yeah,
guild,
the bounty guy,
the guild guy.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. yeah. So he guild. Changes, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And then two,
the legend Mando, they all hate you.
They all hate you. They want to be you. Is that it?
My friend.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But so he changes.
Yeah.
He experiences massive conversion.
Totally.
And then the Mandalorians do as well.
Yeah.
Right, because if you remember, they were all mad yeah. at Mando, right? They have little fisty cuffs
yep.
there at one point. Yep. And then they totally are like, you know what? Heck with this. We're gonna yeah. we're just gonna go out and
it's so true.
Help out our bro.
Same thing.
And then
for
they
the,
and they
the
and they
soldier.
Lose their home because
yeah.
of it.
Oh yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they don't all die, do they? They like
no. They're just like, peace out, we gotta go find a new place.
Right,
to
we
live.
Gotta go undercover. Yeah, 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 okay, good, good, good.
Totally.
I remember when I first saw the pile of helmets, I was crushed. I was like, oh no.
Oh no.
But I think they totally just.
Yeah. Maybe some of them die.
Hitched a ride.
Probably some of them die.
I don't know. They've all got
death
that
is a
scar.
Reality that comes for us all. For
it's
sure.
true.
Yeah.
It's true. But it brings
changed.
Change in the community,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. And then the whole Ooh, town kind of goes yeah. good, right? In season two, we see some of that.
Yeah.
With Shaboy Guildman is
the whole town does
everything.
Yeah, it does change.
Yeah, it's
so
like
true.
Yeah, which is I think very real because all it takes is one yes,
yeah.
right?
Whoa,
and then
yeah.
that really that impacts the body.
Yes.
So if you were ever wow. like, yeah. what could my sin possibly do, or what could yeah. my yes possibly do? It, so much.
Everything. Yeah. So
much.
Absolutely.
We're all profoundly connected because of the Spirit.
Yeah.
Because of our baptism. And we really, oh. yeah, our decisions do impact everyone around
totally.
Us.
Totally.
Kind of thing,
and
for
not
better
everyone,
or worse.
Not everyone will choose, you know, to follow that, of course. You know,
right.
The client is still, you know, I would like to see, how can you say it? I would like to see.
I would like to see the baby.
So good.
So gross.
Oh, he's so good.
Gross.
So not everyone chooses to enter into that, but like, it's amazing to see
yeah,
like Cara Dune change. Like you mm-hmm. said, the Greef Karga changes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a redemption arc even for the IG unit.
Which is crazy,
yeah,
bro.
So crazy.
Freaking getting our boy Mando to tear up.
Yes. Yeah.
Some
so the,
sacrificial
so the,
love.
The bounty hunter at the beginning, the mm-hmm. IG 88 type of droid. Is he IG-11? Yeah, I think it's what he is.
But IG-11.
Yep. Yeah, first he just keeps on wanting to self-destruct, which is really funny and kind of a metaphor. But he keeps on wanting to self-destruct, and eventually, and he wants to kill the baby, so then Mando shoots him. But it turns out later that Kuiil, the Ugnaught, has rehabilitated him and like given him a new
beautiful
program.
Sequence.
Beautiful.
It's for being a droid, right?
Yeah.
That has no like feelings and this sort of
yeah,
stuff. It is
yeah.
a beautiful sequence of just like
yes.
because it feels a lot like a like an addict recovering or
yeah.
something like that, right?
Yes,
or like someone
yeah.
that's been in a car crash relearning how to walk.
Totally. And through that, yeah. then the Mando has to like learn. He doesn't at first trust that he's actually changed.
Heck
right?
No,
he
don't. Yeah.
And he because he has these wounds with droids because I think droids are who killed his.
They killed
his
family.
Yeah,
yeah, it was the droid army.
That's why he doesn't yeah. like any droids.
Makes sense.
And he makes sense. Fair enough.
Fair.
Like you said, you develop. through wounds, you mm-hmm. develop things that help you,
you have to survive.
Survive. Yeah. But ultimately,
and as a kid, you're not rationalizing any of that, right? Like, no. You're just acting and doing whatever keeps you
it's
safe.
It's not your fault that happened, but then you have to work through those wounds later on, you know? Yep. And so the fact that he does eventually come through those and learn to trust the IG unit is amazing. Yeah. And it's really amazing because that also, this is kind of a side note on his character, but it's amazing that when the IG unit does that amazing like self-sacrifice of he goes out and is going to blow up the stormtroopers who would otherwise totally just gun them down. Mm-hmm. At first, Mando is actually like, no, like you can't do this. But the IG unit says like, I am a droid. Like I don't, like he says something about along the lines of like, I'm not a living person. Like I don't have a soul. I can't remember the exact wording, but he straight up says that, mm-hmm. and they kind of allow him to make this sacrifice. And it's cool because he does not have his own soul, but like Queel says, like he's a reflection of his owner and designer. Mm-hmm. And so he is a reflection of Queel, like we are a reflection of the father, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, right. But yeah, he represents Queel's spirit. So even after Queel has been just, you know, gunned down by the scout troopers, he still represents Kuil's last gift, last self-sacrifice. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, he's just a droid. And I think that's a really good image for us. Like, as I think we need to always remember, like, we're more than animals. And we're, like, I don't know, like, you're never, your digital avatar is never going to be, you know, your soul, a representative of your soul. Mm-hmm. Your dog is not as, you know, important as a child, you know, like whatever it is. Like, I think that's I was like amazed that they didn't try to, which was really cool to me because actually some of the other Star Wars projects, basically all of them have over personified droids, especially Solo has this like, it tries to make it into into like a human, but it's like, I'm sorry, it's a droid. It does not have a soul. That is not even fantasy can bring a soul into a droid. You know, if you have a digitally, or if you have like an uploaded, you know, consciousness or something, maybe you start to get there. But that's not what they were even trying to say. It was just like, like trying to represent that this droid has a soul, it has a personality in that way. And it's like, sorry, no, it's just a droid. Ultimately, it does not have a soul. And so, even if they might be funny and cute and awesome, like they're not. Like you have a soul. And that's so important and sets you apart. So anyways, that's the IG unit. And I love that.
Oh, it's beautiful. I think even the, I love just how quickly he cares for the IG unit.
Yeah.
Right. He goes from
Kuil, the Ugnaught or
no,
Mando.
No, the Mandalorian. So, I mean, the IG heals him, the sort of stuff, they get out of there. And he previously was willing to die, right, before taking off his helmet.
Yeah.
And the IG just does it anyway to save him.
Oh, that's right.
And there's that little line exchange that happens there, and then it happens again at the boat kind of thing or something like that. Oh. It was...
I know what you're talking about. I know what you're... Shoot. He says something about, gosh, is it about taking his helmet off, or is it about, this is what I need to do? This is something like that.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I need to do to save you. It's something like that. Because I think it's that, I want to say the IG unit has to take off the Mandalorian's helmet in order to save him. And then at the end, the IG unit is, I think, talking about how he has to do this. He has to, it's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful,
I'm not going to be able to find
it. Oh, it's amazing. And again, it shows like, that's why the story is so good. Is they do such great, set up and payoff with such meaningful characters, and it's lovely and it's amazing, and I don't know. I think we've already hit on some great things with just the Mandalorian, I really calling back to that first thing we talked about, the first like kind of big theme of the father. I had pulled up just a quote from the Catechism.
Please read.
So I thought I'd just share this because like I really think. The reason this show hits for people so hard is not just that it's a good story, not just that it's amazingly well made, not just that there's good characters, but ultimately because it taps into something so fundamental about our hearts.
Yeah.
Like we are in search of the Father. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought of this catechism quote where it says, the desire for God
is written in the human heart, because man is created by God and for God, and God never ceases to draw man to himself. Only in God will he find the truth and happiness that he never stops searching for. And he goes on to, I think, quote another document, and it says, "The dignity of man rests above all on the fact that he is called to communion with God. This invitation to converse with God is addressed to man as soon as he comes into being. For if man exists, it is because God has created him through love, and through love continues to hold him in existence. He cannot live fully according to truth unless he freely acknowledges that love and entrusts himself to his creator." And I honestly really think that they did such an incredible job, like a better job than many evangelists, of tapping into just the core, you know, was it Capax Dei, like the capacity for God that we have as humans, and that desire for God that's there, like a desire for the Father, and desire for that encounter and for a meaning to this life and a mission, and in a knowledge of a love, you know, like I said, like created through love, and through love continues to hold him in existence. We want that love. We need that love. And I really think that the encounter between the Father and the child is such an experience of love. Like in our experience of unconditional love for another person, there's such an image and experience of the far surpassing unconditional love of the Father for us.
Yeah.
And I really think that is what makes The Mandalorian epic and good. And if you haven't watched it,
freaking watch it. Also, why have you been listening this long?
Yes, yes. If you have watched it, and if you have thoughts, please, we want to hear them, right? We want to hear what you have to say. Like, do you agree? Are there huge things that we missed? Of course, we were covering mostly season one this time. We could always do season two another time.
Yeah, and even just, we were even just looking at a couple of the characters in season one.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, there's
absolutely
a lot there.
There's so much there. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Actually, as I was like processing more and more, it's like whole swaths we didn't even cover.
Ooh, word choice.
Yeah, you know. So please let us know. Reach out to us. We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode. Tune in next time when we discuss the tragedy of Macbeth.
Though They Die is sponsored by Net Ministries. To get in touch with Andy and Lee, email us at thoughtheydie@netusa.org.
And to get involved as a net missionary, go to netusa.org/apply and apply today.
Do it.
Thanks, guys.